This is VOA News via remote. I'm Laurel Bowman. Pope Francis called Sunday for global solidarity in fighting the coronavirus pandemic, urging relaxed international sanctions, debt relief for poor nations, and ceasefires in all conflicts. He also condemned arms dealers. And the pontiff warned the European Union that it risked collapse if it did not agree on how to help the region recover. The Pope's Easter message was by far his most political since his election in 2013. It was delivered from an empty St. Peter's Basilica instead of to the usual massive crowds in the square outside. Francis expressed grave concern for the future of Europe, saying it was vital that rivalries that existed before World War II do not regain force due to the pandemic. European Union nations are divided over how to help the continent's economy recover, with Italy and other Eurozone members wanting to issue Eurobonds backed by all, but Germany, the Netherlands, and others opposed to that. Meanwhile, renowned Italian tenor Andrea Bocelli is giving a Music for Hope solo performance Sunday at the Duomo in Milan, Italy. Bocelli wrote on Instagram, "History teaches us that after this is all over, will come a spring brighter than any we remember. Then we will have an unmissable opportunity to start fresh with a new system of values." The performance will be streamed live globally. He'll sing well-loved classics such as Ave Maria and be accompanied by the cathedral's organist on one of the world's largest pipe organs. All this comes against the somber backdrop of a world plagued by an ever-growing number of confirmed coronavirus infections. Globally, that number has surged to more than 1.8 million, with more than 110,000 dead. This is VOA News. The U.S. has recorded more than 20,000 deaths from the coronavirus, overtaking Italy for the highest death toll in the world. More than 19,000 people have died in Italy. Nevertheless, the commissioner of the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, or FDA, appeared on an ABC News talk show Sunday, saying the Trump administration views May 1st as a target date for relaxing stay-at-home restrictions across the U.S. Commissioner Stephen Hahn said, "We see light at the end of the tunnel." However, he added, there are many factors to consider to finally determine when it will be safe to lift restrictions. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson was released from a London hospital Sunday after being treated in intensive care for the novel coronavirus. And his pregnant fiancée praised the medical staff who helped the Prime Minister come through COVID-19, adding that there were many tough times. Carrie Simmons said via Twitter that her heart goes out to all those in similar situations worried about their loved ones. Mr. Johnson will not immediately return to work, according to a statement from his office. He was admitted to hospital 1 week ago, 10 days after he tested positive for the coronavirus. As he recovers, Foreign Secretary Dominic Raab has been filling in. In multiple messages on social media, 10 Downing Street has wished Britons a happy Easter Sunday, reminding them that churches remain closed and lockdowns are still in effect. Britain faces grim projections that the country could be the worst affected in Europe by the coronavirus. The death toll in Britain climbed to 9,875 over the weekend, with over 900 deaths reported Saturday. It's now the European country with the fourth highest number of deaths and climbing. The Prime Minister of Japan Sunday drew an angry response from some Twitter users after sharing a video of himself on his sofa with his dog drinking tea and reading, with a message telling people, "Stay at home." "Who do you think you are?" became a top trend on Twitter, with users saying his message ignored the plight of those struggling to make a living during the coronavirus outbreak. The Prime Minister's video, which featured his pet dog, was a response to popular musician Jen Hoshino, who uploaded a video of himself singing about dancing indoors and inviting other people to collaborate. Other Twitter users defended the Prime Minister, saying that even he should be allowed some downtime. The number of novel coronavirus infections in Japan has exceeded 7,000, public broadcaster NHK reported. It was the first weekend since Japan declared a state of emergency in major population centers to fight the spread of coronavirus. Meanwhile, Wuhan, the Chinese city where the outbreak started late last year, finally emerged from its slumber after 76 days of lockdown. Residents were elated to be back outside, though life is far from normal. For more on this, visit our website at voanews.com. This is VOA News via remote. I'm Laurel Bowman.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington.
We believe that the stay-at-home order and the restriction of movement will to a very large extent curtail the spread of the virus. Since coronavirus is not transmitted via air, but two droplets.
In Nigeria, the Delta State government calls on Christians to stay home as they celebrate Easter Sunday.
Other donors partnering with this government has pumped in millions of dollars, but yet still, Gambians, we haven't had anything that government is going to subsidize.
The Gambian opposition party says efforts to curb the spread of the coronavirus are ineffective.
I think government has to be shown sometimes that there is a limit to how far they can go in doing certain things, or how far they can be allowed to be negligent with people's lives or exercise undue force.
And Ugandan groups call on the government to respect the fundamental human rights of citizens. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari has extended the lockdown imposed on the capital Abuja, Lagos, and Ogun states. The lockdown was originally scheduled to end Monday, but in a statement, the president said there is need for an extension of the stay-at-home restriction to stop the spread of the coronavirus. Meanwhile, the Delta State governor says the stay-at-home restrictions remain. The authorities warned residents to reject rumors that the restrictions have been lifted to enable Christian worshippers to go to church to celebrate Easter Sunday. The remarks come after the state confirmed a third COVID-19 case. Charles Aniagu, Commissioner for Information for Delta State, tells me that the governor wants worshippers to observe the day at home as the authorities try to stop the spread of the disease.
Well, thank you very much, my brother Peter. There is nothing like that. We have asked our Christian brothers to worship at home and pray for the state and indeed the nation. We declare that we are going to continue with our restriction order, that nobody who does not belong to the essential service group should be found on the streets. They should remain in their homes, because that way we will stop the break the chain of transmission. And just this evening, we got report that we have another transmission, which is a third one in Delta, and this time around in Asaba. So that makes it very clear that the pandemic has progressed to community transmission, and we can't take chances. We are hoping that by the grace of God, we will continue to cooperate with us, so that at the end of the day, we are able to defeat the coronavirus pandemic.
How are people in the state reacting to measures your administration is implementing to ensure that the spread of the coronavirus is curtailed? And what are some of the other issues you are seeking to address in terms of sensitization and educating the masses?
I must admit that it's not been very easy for our people to keep fit with the decisions we've taken, but a number of them, a good number, have continued to stay at home. The reason why for some is a little difficult is because of their means of survival. Well, what we have done is to encourage them to continue to stay at home while we make provisions for palliatives, which we distribute to them in the course of this week that we're entering. But we have also pleaded with well-meaning individuals to assist, both in terms of providing welfare packages to our people, as well as sensitizing them on the dangers of COVID-19. And that way we're able to get our people to appreciate the need for them to stay at home and then continue to cooperate with the government.
With the implementation of measures to curb the coronavirus in your state, how are these measures dovetailing in the federal government's effort to fight the disease across the nation in Nigeria?
The most important thing we've done is to set up isolation and treatment centers, as well as sensitization of the people. We believe that the stay-at-home order and the restriction of movement will to a very large extent curtail the spread of the virus. Since coronavirus is not transmitted via air, but through droplets, it means that if individuals don't move, coronavirus will not move. And so now that we've been able to curtail the movement of our people, and believing that they stay along that line, we would have assisted the federal government in ensuring that our people don't take it to other states, neither do we also receive it from other states. We are convinced that if every state take the measures we've taken in Delta, our country will be free of coronavirus in the not too distant time.
Looking forward, what should the people of the state expect in terms of alleviating their suffering because they will not be able to go out due to the restrictions? So their daily needs in terms of food is met.
Our first action is to provide food to the vulnerable members of the society. We are doing so because if you decide to distribute money, everybody will show up as being vulnerable. But beyond that, we are reviewing the developments day by day. If we get to the level where we now have to begin to ask agencies that are responsible for either microcredit or the likes to take certain actions, we will. But at the moment, we are much more interested in getting the people to feed. And once we cross this particular period, we can begin to take a look at other issues. But we have also, as a government, reviewed our programs with a view to ensuring that projects and programs that will touch the people more are emphasized and focused on, rather than just the projects that we may have included in the 2020 budget.
Charles Aniagu is the Commissioner of Information for Delta State in Nigeria. He spoke with me from the state's capital, Asaba. The Gambian Opposition Alliance for Patriotic Reorientation and Construction, or APRC, says it is not impressed with ongoing efforts by the government to stop the spread of the coronavirus. The party says former President Yahya Jammeh would have performed better than the current administration is doing. But supporters of the ruling party rejected the criticism. They said President Adama Barrow continues to demonstrate leadership by implementing measures to curb the spread of the disease. Duduja, a spokesperson for the opposition party, tells me that the former president was proactive and effective during the Ebola outbreak by closing the borders down quickly, among other measures, so citizens were protected from the deadly disease.
Thank you very much, Mr. Petra. That's definitely a fact. Looking into when Jammeh was in power, the Ebola pandemic, when there was an outbreak of the Ebola pandemic, he never wasted time at closing the border and taking all necessary measures to make sure that we never had a single case of Ebola in this country. So people are making contrast and comparing the steps and measures he took compared to this government, who waited until we reported certain suspected cases before they started acting. So they believe the steps the government took in preventing this COVID-19 was not very timely. So based on that, they said if he was here, he would have taken measures prior to having any cases.
But some of your critics are saying that you are second-guessing the government's work in implementing measures to protect the people of the Gambia, and they are doing quite well, they argue. What is your response to that?
Once again, they're doing quite well. I disagree. Looking at the Minister of Justice when he tabled his motion at Parliament, Parliament just asked him what strategic plan do they have for the Gambian people, like when they wanted to extend the state of emergency for another 90 days. The minister could not present to the parliamentarians, the lawmakers, any strategic plan that the government has for the people of this great nation, which is definitely something that we cannot uphold to. And he said they had a plan, but it's in the system, not printed. So this what made the parliamentarians to query, and they said instead of 90 days, definitely, some opted for 30 days. Some said 45 days, which later was approved for 45 days. 500 million government said that dialysis that government has released for this COVID-19 pandemic. Now, up to date, they said the funds are going to be disbursed to various ministries so that they will tackle this pandemic. But as of now, nobody can tell you how much has gone to Minister of Finance, how much has gone to Minister of Health, what and what they've spent this money for. With the other donors partnering with this government has pumped in millions of dollars, but yet still, Gambians, we haven't had anything that government is going to subsidize. Taking, for example, NAWEC, National But water and electricity company is not a privatized sector. It's owned by government. For instance, government could have waived at least 50% reduce the rate or the bill which people are paying during this coronavirus pandemic to make life easier. We've seen other countries, our next door neighbor Senegal, even the citizens in this country are going to their embassies and they're giving them money about $3,000, $4,000. What has the government done for its people so far? Mr. Peter, definitely let those critics understand this is not about politics, but it's about giving back to the Gambian people with all the millions in our midst. Nothing is shared yet.
But Uduja, isn't it clear that the government is implementing measures as well as requesting for an extension of the lockdown as part of the effort to curb the spread of the disease in the Gambia at the moment? Why are you not in support of it, or why is your party not in support of it, but just to criticize? Some of the supporters of the government are saying you are just criticizing for the sake of criticisms.
We're not against the state of emergency, and it's not a total lockdown. But all we did is to tell government that you must implement it properly. We'll give you example. We'll not criticize for the sake of criticizing, but positive criticism to put things right. For instance, government has said that public service, public transport will take half the number of passengers they used to carry. That's all government said. And these public transport, we know they carry a different number of passengers. Take, for example, vehicles that carry 7 passengers. If you say half of that number, are you going to say 3.5 people? No, you must be specific in giving certain numbers. Like some of these small taxis, they carry like 4 people. Now, if you said half the number, it means 2, 1 in front, 1 at the back, which still you have extra space at the back. I think to be more specific, you need to give outright numbers of different type of vehicles what they can carry. You cannot say that the half of the passengers will be dropped and yet still the fare remains the same. There's no decrement in fuel. You did not reduce fuel for them, and you don't allow the transportations to increase the fare. The fare for people that are moving from place to place, which has resulted to a lot of vehicles grounding, saying that being on the traffic is just a waste of fuel. And it left people stranded in large numbers out in the streets. So it's not a total lockdown. People are going about their businesses. And as we speak, when it started the first week, people sat at home. But as of now, it's business as usual. Up to 70-80% people are going about. The laws are not implemented. People are not doing thorough checks, that I can assure you. It's business as usual. And we're not criticizing. We're not against it. We definitely, you know, go in line that there should be a state of emergency. This pandemic, it's all of us, our fight collectively. As a nation, we should fight it together. But put in right measures. And you cannot keep people at home without giving them support or providing means for them to make use of their end-to-end means. There are people who go to the market. You know, after market sales, that's when they will be able to buy food, go home and feed their families. So if you ground them at home, they don't go to the market and make sales, how are they going to survive? These are the questions that the, you know, most Gambians are asking. That's why I said they should have done reduction in essential commodities and services that people need on daily basis to make life easier. But the government haven't done anything as of now to reduce either fuel or food or water or electricity, and you want to force people to stay at home.
Your party is also asking the government to repatriate citizens who are in infected countries. Don't you think that is a rather political way to say it, particularly when the government is finding it difficult to raise funds to meet all its obligations as well as combat the spread of the disease?
That is just a request we're making. It is up to government to weigh up their resources and see whatever is possible. We're referring to citizens who are stranded at our next door neighbors in Senegal. I don't think it will require much resources to repatriate them from Senegal to the Gambia, because most of them were caught by surprise. The state of emergency warnings, there were no alarms being sent ahead for people to prepare for it. The government just came out with a statement, made a proclamation, and that's it. It hit some people too hard that they found it very difficult to make movement. I personally know some people who went to Dakar to buy goods. These are businessmen and women, and this proclamation found them there when borders were closed. So still now they're stranded in Senegal. These are the type of people we're saying let them do something to bring them home. They went out not prepared to overstay in any country, and financially it's been difficult for them. These are just recommendations. It's up to government to weigh what is possible and what is not possible. It's a request they just have to consider. And again, it's for them to decide. We cannot push too hard, but we're just making recommendations.
Dudu Jah is the spokesperson for the Gambian opposition party, the Alliance for Patriotic Reorientation and Construction, or APRC. He spoke with me from the capital, Banjul. Ugandan civil society and human rights groups are calling on the government to ensure the rights of citizens are protected as it implements measures to stop the spread of the coronavirus. The groups also condemned what they called the mistreatment of a popular columnist and cartoon artist, James Sentango. The attorney for the journalist said his client had returned from a European trip but was forced into a state-controlled isolation center for more than the required 14 days. This despite repeated testing negative of the COVID-19 disease. Journalist James Sentango tells me that he is in talks with his attorney to decide the next line of action after well-wishers called on him to sue the government for abusing his rights.
Yeah, when I was on my way back to Uganda, a directive was passed by the president where everyone coming from what were referred to as Category 1 countries, of which UK, where I was coming from, was one, was supposed to go for mandatory quarantining. Of course, what we had in mind was that we were to self-quarantine. Since it had changed at the airport, that's where we were informed that a new directive had been passed and we had to wait there. We waited for over 4-5 hours, some, because I found some people waiting there. And then we were put onto a bus to be taken to a place where we were to be quarantined, a hotel called Central Inn. On the bus, of course, we were parked there without any regard, any consideration of safety measures, so which beat all considerations that one would think about if it was about protecting us from infection or if protecting society. It appeared that basically it was to protect society from infection, not us, because we were headed onto a bus and taken into a hotel, which hotel itself was not really meeting any of the basic standards of quarantining. So basically that's what happened before we were moved to another hotel later, after raising a lot of concern on what was happening where we were taken first.
What is your next line of action following the decision to hold you for over 14 days as the WHO guidelines requires?
Not yet decided on a precise course of action. I talked to my lawyers, the Center for Legal Aid Counsel, Isaac Semakade, and we had considered suing government. But I think in the current circumstances, the most important thing is to first give government time to sort the problem that we are faced with. I know that currently they are faced with so many issues, so many things that they have to address, so it wouldn't really be appropriate in that at the moment to start engaging them in court battles. So I think with time we shall decide what to do.
Well, James, some Ugandans are saying that you should not let this matter go since your rights were violated. Do you think their suggestion is justified?
I think they're justified because it's usually by letting such things pass that they are repeated and repeated over and over again. I think government has to be showed sometimes that there is a limit to how far they can go in doing certain things, or how far they can be allowed to be negligent with people's lives or exercise undue force. So I would understand if people suggest that I should be doing something beyond mere bringing it to the public or to the press to talk about whatever happened to me. Yes, government has to be held accountable for whatever they do. I think these were gross violations, and the nature of the threat or the degree of the threat was not really in proportion to the kind of actions that they took, or the negligence was quite unexpected of a government that knew what was to come.
that knew about the disease and how to prepare for it.
James, what are the major takeaways of this experience that you went through with regards to how the government is implementing measures to fight the spread of the disease in Uganda?
I think the takeaway is mainly that most of the problems we have faced during this period are problems that are entrenched within many of the ills, the evils that we have allowed in our system, in our political system, in our service delivery, problems like impunity, corruption, incompetence, that the pandemic found us with all these, and they seem to affect almost everything we do. The negligence with which we were handled when we arrived, when we were dumped at Entebbe, at Central Inn, is the same negligence that we have seen by which we have abandoned our health system. And it's partly the reason as to why we have been panicking and making so many mistakes. We are panicking because we know that our health system, which we have abandoned for so long, cannot really contain the problem that we are faced with. So we are grappling with so many things in a gamble that they might help prevent the problem reaching here, because we know that we will certainly be overwhelmed.
James Sentango is a popular Ugandan columnist and cartoon artist. He spoke with me from the capital, Kampala. The second confirmed COVID-19 death in Zimbabwe was recorded recently in the country's second largest city, Bulawayo. Residents say they are disturbed by the revelation, given the city's lack of preparedness for dealing with the pandemic. Zimbabwe so far has confirmed only 11 cases of the virus and 3 deaths nationwide. For VOA, Adigondo reports from Bulawayo.
The health ministry says the country's second confirmed COVID-19 death was a 79-year-old man living in Bulawayo, about 450 kilometers from the capital, Harare. The announcement has spread fear in the city, which has no COVID-19 care center. Residents are expressing concern over the health ministry's warning that the patient may have infected several people who are walking around not knowing they are infected. The deceased had first visited his physician in late March, complaining of a sore throat, fever, and dry cough. The man did not respond to antibiotics and was admitted into Mater Dei Hospital on April the 2nd. Hospital authorities contacted the health ministry's response team, who collected samples for testing. The man died on the 4th of April, but his death wasn't announced until 3 days later. An official from the city's environmental health department speaks on condition of anonymity and explains the delay.
No, there was no attempt to hide the issue. See, what it did is we took samples just like any other samples, and then they were tested and they were found to be positive. And then after having found them to be positive, we then notified the relevant authorities, which is the Ministry of Health, and then they actually gave feedback to the nation.
Zimbabwe currently has one testing center in Harare called the National Microbiology Reference Laboratory. Critics say the centralization undermines the efforts to contain the pandemic, especially for a city such as Bulawayo, where many people now live after they fled the coronavirus outbreak in South Africa. Residents expressed consternation over Bulawayo's lack of facilities to fight the virus. Peter Nyoni, a 37-year-old mechanic, says the country's resources are mismanaged.
I think it's an issue of misplaced priorities. It's just a mess, I think. Especially from a human rights perspective, you feel like the government is not being sincere in terms of dealing with this. And that does not inspire any confidence, I think, from the citizens. It takes us back to the rhetoric, you know, that always, you know, going on about devolution, but here we are. Samples have to be sent by road to Harare. Honestly, I don't think that's acceptable.
There are concerns that the country has only a few hundred usable coronavirus test kits. The government has appealed to aid groups and charities for more, but it would take weeks for the kits to arrive. The Zimbabwe Association of Doctors for Human Rights is suing the government over several issues relating to the lack of critical supplies, including personal protective equipment, PPE, for frontline health workers. The association is raising concern about the lack of test kits and centers outside of Harare, and said Zimbabwe could potentially experience what they call the Italian disaster, in which health workers have died of the coronavirus. Tetha Simango is a nurse in Blawayo.
So we do not know how many people are incubating it right now as we speak. You could be having it, I could be having it. Because our relatives flocked from SA coming here, and who tested them? No one. So it's still incubating. We're just sitting on a time bomb.
Zimbabwe has tested several hundred people for the coronavirus and confirmed fewer than 20 cases. But medical experts say the lack of thorough contact tracing means that far more people have been exposed to the virus and possibly infected. Reporting for VOA, this is Adigondo.
And you are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, D.C. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, the leader of opposition lawmakers in Botswana's parliament says the government is to blame for exposing at least 100 people to the coronavirus. Dumelang Salishendu says it was reckless for a nurse working on the front lines of the crisis to be assigned to work in parliament. This after the nurse tested positive to COVID-19. The public health director, Dr. Malachi Chipayagi, has since imposed a 14-day self-quarantine to everybody present in parliament. Those present include President Mokgweetsi Masisi, his deputy Slamba Tugwane, the entire cabinet, parliamentarians, senior government officials, as well as members of the media who cover the program. But officials of the government have rejected the criticism, saying efforts will continue to curb the spread of the disease. To learn more about the concerns of the exposure to the disease, I reached Dumelang Salishendu, leader of the Botswana opposition lawmakers.
Yes, what happened is that when Parliament was sitting on its first day to discuss the state of emergency, it was later found out that a nurse who had tested positive for corona had been deployed at the National Assembly. In terms of the protocols, then it meant that all those who attended the same meeting had some casual contact with the nurse have been placed on quarantine. But we've been given an option of self-quarantine at our houses. Some have had to go into monitored quarantine because they did not have the facilities. They did not have sufficient appropriate accommodation in Gaborone for the self-quarantine. So that is the position.
Dumelang, how are your constituents, as well as the entire country, handling the 28-day lockdown imposed by the president as part of the measure to curb the spread of COVID-19 or the coronavirus disease?
Look, I think we have all accepted that the lockdown was unavoidable. This virus primarily spreads through humans moving from one place to the other. But it is obviously going to come with major inconveniences. The more troubling part is people who will not be able to earn any income because they are part of the informal sector and are unable to trade in any way. A lot of businesses in my constituency are tourism related. The tourism industry is essentially locked down in the sense that non-operational. It's not even working from home. People are not any income, so there we'll be waiting for a government comprehensive response in terms of how they plan to assist people who essentially are without any income on account of the lockdown.
What is your reaction to report that some of your fellow lawmakers are going out and about pretty much defying the lockdown?
Look, I don't think they went out to deliberately undermine the instructions for a lockdown. And I'm not going to justify their actions. It was unfortunate. I think they regret what they did. I've already seen one of them apologizing. The health officials, in my view, were unclear about what should happen immediately when we had leaving the place where Parliament was sitting. The health authorities themselves, including the person assigned to lead the national response, was on national television yesterday. He had gone to the studios. He was supposed to be under quarantine. So there was a gap that resulted in people behaving in a manner not consistent with what was to be expected. But I don't think they went out to deliberately undermine the instruction to be under quarantine.
What are your views about the government measures to help alleviate the suffering of the masses, those that you initially described as not having the means to be able to cope with the lockdown?
Government response in terms of sustenance for those most vulnerable members of our society is unclear at the moment. There is no plan that has been put forward in terms of how people can access assistance, like I said, particularly the informal sector. So for now, it's a wait and see. There has been a promise that a comprehensive program will be unveiled soon. I think priority, it appears to me, was for the president to get all the emergency powers which he now has under the state of public emergency, which Parliament approved.
Dumelong Salishendo is the leader of the opposition in the Botswana Parliament. He spoke with me from the capital, Habaroni. It's now time for Nightline Africa Sports, and for that, let's join Douglas Mpuga. Hello, Douglas.
Hi, Peter, and good evening, sports fans. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports. Let's begin with athletics. Dates have been confirmed for the World Athletics Championships Oregon 2022. The World Athletic Championships in Oregon have been rescheduled to 15th to 24th July 2022. This follows the postponement of the Tokyo Olympics and Paralympics Games to 2021 due to coronavirus pandemic. The Oregon World Championship were originally scheduled for August 6th to 15th, 2021, but have been rescheduled to the following year to avoid a clash with the Olympic and Paralympic Games. Two other major championships are also due to take place in 2022, the Birmingham 2022 Commonwealth Games and the Multi-Sport European Championships in Munich. In football, there is a call to test all English Premier League players for coronavirus before the football season in England can resume. According to the chief executive of the League Managers Association, tests must be made available first to national health service workers and patients. Professional football has been postponed indefinitely because of the pandemic. Meanwhile, in Germany, the Bundesliga, which was halted on March 13th, will not resume before April 30th. But German teams were the first from Europe's top leagues to return to training with precautions in place. According to the chief executive of the Bundesliga, plans will be put in place for games to return by the beginning of May, with the remaining 9 games of the season to be completed by the end of June. Finally, in boxing, heavyweight boxer Kubrat Pulov has pledged half of his purse, an estimated $2 million, from his world heavyweight title fight against Britain's Anthony Joshua to help the fight against the coronavirus. The fight, scheduled for June 20th at London's Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, was postponed because of the pandemic. The 38-year-old Pulev is expected to earn about $5 million from the fight. World champion Joshua, who has not fought since December, when he gained a unanimous points victory over Andy Ruiz Jr. in Saudi Arabia to regain the IBF, WBA, WABO, and IBO belts, he lost to the American-Mexican in New York last June. A new date for the Pulev-Joshua fight is yet to be worked out. And that's about it for this edition of Nightline Africa Sports. Back to you, Peter.
Thanks a lot, Douglas. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. We'll link up with you again next Sunday for another look at African sports. Nightline Africa Sports. It's Sunday on Nightline Africa. This is the time we get to relax and reflect. A flashback with music from the continent.
Chanukia, uturi kajifisha, vidore nasimamia, ukingoni nafikishwa. Nani kosha mwili kwa maji ya madafu, yeno koja na nanifunza kucheza rafu. Anichua tumbo langiri kwa mafuta ya karafu, nikichoka ananikanda kwa mabarafu. Sila kila jam, majam, majam, mahaba ya kila jam, majam, majam, sila kila jam, majam, majam, mahaba ya kila jam. Kifuani unipaka harua, mikono tende anazichambua, anilamba. Kitandani humwaga maua, mingile ata tembe siku anajua, antoa ushamba. Nalitake nini kwake, nyombe sipewe, iwe pepa machake chake, chakwe mwenyewe. Kani papo mero yake, ninywe nilewe.
mambo shagani mwake mwake mangaka msewe libandike tenzi kama gazeti walisome tuadabishe sangara shombo vipweti tuamone nikila nilishe chapati za alizeti ninone tuwafungishe midomo uzi simenti tuwashone nani kosha mwili kwa maji ya madafu yeno kocha na nani funza kucheza rafu anichua tumbo la ngiri kwa mafuta ya karafu nikichoka na nani kanda kwa mabarafu Silake la jam, ma jam, ma jam, mahabba yake ya jam, ma jam, ma jam, silake la jam, ma jam, ma jam.
That was music from the continent, and we hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Saleh, reporter Douglas Mpuga, and producer Saida Hamdoun, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, the chameleon changes its color to match the earth. The earth doesn't change colors to match the chameleon. I'm your host, Peter Clotet, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.